Hi, welcome to the Frihof Institute of Progressive Halakha. I'm Rabbi Mark Wyshovsky with the 12-minute shiur number 41, sounding the shofar on Shabbat. We'll be working from a source sheet that you can download at our website, www.frihofinstitute.org/learning, and then scroll down to the 12-minute shiur number 41. Well, it's that time again. We're recording in Elul 5783. Rosh Hashanah is coming up, and it will occur on Shabbat. So this raises the question, shall we sound the shofar on that day? According to traditional practice, we know it's forbidden to sound the shofar on Shabbat, but by contrast, Reform congregations do sound the shofar on that day. Now, usually they cite the justification that Reform congregations observe only one day of Rosh Hashanah instead of the traditional two, so that if they were to observe the traditional prohibition, their members would not hear the shofar at all and they would not fulfill the mitzvah. Now, that's a good pragmatic rationale, of course, but occasionally you'll hear Reform rabbis claim that even the traditional halakha supports their practice to sound the shofar on Shabbat. What, you say? That can't be right. Didn't you just say there's a prohibition against that? Well, in this installment, we'll try to understand what those Reform rabbis are talking about. So let's begin with the source of that traditional prohibition, which is Mishnah Rosh Hashanah chapter 4, Mishnah 1, lines 1 through 12 on the source sheet. Yom Tov shel Rosh Hashanah shechal hiyot b'Shabbat, b'mikdash hayu tokim aval lo b'medina. When the festival day of Rosh Hashanah fell on Shabbat, they used to sound the shofar in the temple, but not outside of it. Now, you'll see there Rashi and Rambam differ over whether the word Mikdash refers to the temple or to the entire city of Jerusalem. We're going with Rashi here. Now, back to the text. Mishecharei Beit HaMikdash hitkin Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai sheyohot tokin b'kol makom sheyesh bo Beit Din. When the temple was destroyed, Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai decreed, he issued a takanah, that when Rosh Hashanah fell on Shabbat, the shofar would be sounded in any place where there is a Beit Din. Amar Rabbi Elazar, lo hitkin Rabban Yochanan Zakkai ela b'Yavne bilvad. Rabbi Elazar said this decree applied to Yavne only. Amru lo echad Yavne ve'echad kol makom sheyesh bo Beit Din. His colleagues said to him, no, it applies to any place where a Beit Din sits. So the first thing to notice here is that there indeed exists a prohibition against sounding the shofar on Shabbat anywhere outside the temple. At least there was until Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai came along. So, what is the source of that prohibition? Now, that's a good question. It's especially good because it's exactly the question the Talmud asks in Bavli Rosh Hashanah, Daf 29b, which begins on line 17. Minah hani mile. So what is the scriptural proof for this rule? Rabbi Levi Bar Lachma said in the name of Rabbi Chama Bar Hanina, well, you got one verse, Leviticus chapter 3, verse 24, that says, in the seventh month, on the first day of the month, you shall observe a day of complete rest, a sacred occasion devoted to zichron truah, remembering the sound of the shofar. While another verse in Numbers chapter 29 says, on the first day of the seventh month, you will observe a day of truah, of blasting the horns. So which is it? Do you hear the shofar blast on the first day of the seventh month, Rosh Hashanah, or simply remember or talk about it? And yes, the word zichron in the Leviticus verse, in its pshat understanding, probably doesn't mean remembering. It probably means sounding, just like what Numbers 29 says. But remember, the rabbis are reading that verse here according to its drash. So the Talmud continues in line 28, Lakasha, kan b'yom tov shechaliyot b'shabbat, kan b'yom tov shechaliyot b'chol. There is no contradiction between these verses. One of them, the Leviticus verse, refers to a festival which falls on Shabbat, and the other to a festival which falls on a weekday. In other words, the Torah itself prohibits the sounding of the shofar when the Yom Tov of Rosh Hashanah occurs on Shabbat. Okay, fine. But There's a problem with this theory, as Rava points out in the Talmud text that begins on line 33. If the Isur, the prohibition against sounding a shofar on Shabbat, is midoraita, from the Torah itself, then it would have applied in the temple as well as everywhere else. Yet the Mishnah tells us that they sounded the shofar in the temple on Shabbat. Okay, but if you say that, well, there must have been some verse, there must be some pasuk that comes to exempt the temple from this prohibition, well, no, that's not necessary, because sounding the shofar or playing any musical instrument is an act of chokhmah, of skill, rather than of melacha, a species of work forbidden by the Torah that would require some special verse to allow it to take place on Shabbat. So that brings us to line 42, Ella Amar Rava, midoraita mishra share, v'rabanan hu degazur be. Rava concludes that midoraita, it's permitted to sound the shofar on Shabbat, so that the prohibition that the Mishnah mentions is midrabanan, a rabbinic gezerah that comes to act as a siag, a fence to protect us from violating a mitzvah of the Torah. In this case, the mitzvah is the prohibition against carrying an object on Shabbat b'reshut harabim, through the public domain, in the street. If we were permitted to sound the shofar on Shabbat, then a person might take the shofar on that day through the streets to an expert to learn the proper way of sounding it, and thereby violate the prohibition against carrying. Thus, as a preventive measure, the rabbis prohibit tikiat shofar, sounding the shofar on Shabbat. And for the same reason, they prohibit the act of netilat lulav, taking the lulav when the first day of Sukkot falls on Shabbat, as it does whenever the first day of Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbat, like this year. Somebody might carry the lulav in the street, right? And for that reason, they also prohibit the reading of the Megillah on Shabbat, a decree that was relevant back when Purim theoretically could occur on that day. And all of this is the codified halakha, as we can see from the passage in Rambam's Mishneh Torah, which begins on line 55. Now for the second part of the Mishnah. Remember that Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai hitkin, he enacted a rule, a takana, that the shofar may be sounded, even in the absence of the temple, in any place where there sits a beit din, a rabbinical court. Now, for the reason behind this, we turn again to Rambam in the text beginning on line 72. But for reasons that will become obvious, we're going to read it out of order, starting with line 73, where the Rambam says, "V'lama tokin bifnei beit din, mipnei she beit din zrizin hein." Why is the shofar sounded on Shabbat in the presence of a beit din, that is, against the rabbinic gezerah? Well, because the Beit Din is careful to enforce the law, and they will warn the community and make sure that nobody carries the shofar in the public domain. In other words, that rabbinic gezerah, which prohibited the sounding of the shofar on Shabbat, was never meant to apply to places where a Beit Din existed and could exercise the proper supervision to keep people from carrying the shofar on Shabbat in Reshut HaRabim. Okay, now, since the rabbi of a synagogue also sits as its Av Beit Din, the head of its court, this should mean that any congregation today may sound the shofar on Shabbat. But this leads us back to the first part of Rambam's text, which begins on line 72. Vazman hazeh shecharev ha-mikdash, kol makom sheyesh bo Beit Din kavua, vohu sheyeh samuch be'eretz Yisrael, tokin bo b'Shabbat. Today, when the temple has been destroyed, the shofar is sounded on Shabbat in any place where there is an established, that is, kavua or permanent Beit Din, provided that its members have received smicha or ordination in Eretz Yisrael. Now, when Rambam speaks here of smicha, he means the ancient smicha, the laying on of hands, the ritual that supposedly stretched back to Moses and Joshua, spoken of in the Torah. This was the smicha that, according to tradition, was possessed by members of the Sanhedrin, the Beit Din HaGadol. That chain of ordination, beginning with Moses and Joshua, ceased We're not sure when, some 1,500 to 2,000 years ago. Nobody has that kind of ordination today. Yeah, well, we have something called smicha, the ordination of rabbis, but that's a purely symbolic reenactment of the ancient ritual. And that means that no Beit Din today has the authority to permit the sounding of shofar on Shabbat. Now, we don't know why Rambam says that this Beit Din must be composed of ordained judges, though if we had time, we could speculate. At any rate, the Talmudic passage itself does not explicitly make that requirement. We do know that at least one major halachic scholar, Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi, the Rif, does not read the text that way. As his great commentator, Rabbeinu Nissim Girondi, attests, and that begins in line 84 of the source sheet, Rif allowed the shofar to be sounded on Shabbat in the presence of his Beit Din. And he, of course, lived long after the ancient smicha ritual was discontinued. So it turns out that contemporary practice breaks down along the lines of this machloket. While Orthodox and conservative communities follow Rambam and don't sound the shofar on Shabbat, the Reform minhag to fulfill the mitzvah on that day accords with Alfasi. And that's an important point of substance. The issue here is not whether Reform Jews attach importance to the prohibition against carrying on Shabbat. That's irrelevant. Rather, the issue hinges upon how we value, how we evaluate our own Beit Din. Reform Jews believe that their own Batei Din, their rabbis and institutional leadership, are sufficiently capable of exercising supervision over communal affairs. Reform Jews do not anticipate the reinstitution of the Sanhedrin and the ancient smicha any more than they look forward to the rebuilding of the temple. Our own Batei Din are good enough, thus there is no reason to insist upon smicha, especially given that the Talmud doesn't mention it. And Kal Vachomer, there's no reason to insist upon it if it means giving up entirely on the mitzvah of shofar just because Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbat. Now, if you want a more detailed essay on this subject, it's available at our website. Check the link at the top of the source sheet. In the meantime, this has been the 12-Minute Shiur number 41 from the Frihof Institute of Progressive Halacha. Thanks for learning with us. Lehitraot.